Bokotov. In spite of the cold weather, I encountered a very warm community. And Hashem, I'm not a stranger either to the community nor to the yeshiva here on several occasions to visit in the past. We're ready in Chodesh Kislev. We have a minute in Eretz Yisrael when we do Birkat HaChodesh for Kislev. Maybe they do it here too. When they say Yechatshei Al Kadosh Baruch Hu, they sing it to the tune of Moaz Tzur, which puts you into the framework of the Yom Tov that's coming up during the month. And it's not just a cantorial shtick, but it's actually based on the Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, that for 6 months, the Shluchot Beit Din would send out messengers to inform about the Rosh Chodesh. And the Rav Zecharon the Brocha told us that Birkat HaChodesh is not a zecher for Rosh Chodesh or Kiddush HaChodesh, but it's a zecher for the publicity that the Beit Din would do, that was very part of the authority. And that's why we do it the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh, because the Shabbat, there are always more people in shul on a Shabbat than any given weekday day, even on a Rosh Chodesh day in the weekday. And that's why it's pushed back to Shabbat. It's the Pirsum HaDavar, the announcement. And therefore, as the days of old, messengers were sent out specifically for the months that there was a Chag, so the Chazonim sing Yechatshei Al Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Nigen of the month, whatever it might be, whether it's before Adar, Purim, before Pesach, and so on. And for Yom Neroim, there's no Birkas HaKadosh, but for Elul, they do this. So we're now in Kislev, and there's a certain Hanukkah mode that you get also in the stores, because Sukkah and Yod are being sold already, since Sukkah is because of Zuiz and Magdina. And we don't wait. People want to know why. Because this is a year that's going to be
Thank you very much. Shloshim Yom Kodem HaKag is like 90 days.
Coffee break, I
see. This is also a good custom. Okay, good coffee on Sunday morning. Yeah, really. Because we're going to deal with some culinary matters here, Basam Chalav. The question, you know, how did this sukkaniyot, the jelly donuts, get into the picture of Hanukkah? And it's very, very simple, because it takes a couple of oil to prepare the batch of the dough for the sukkaniyot. But when you eat one, you squeeze out at least 8 bottles worth of oil from every donut. So there's a nes pashem in every single sukkaniyot. Basam Chalav is one subject, and Erot Hanukkah is another subject. They're completely two different worlds in the world of Halakha. Basam Chalav in Yoredea, Hanukkah in Orachayim, and what could possibly be an integrated topic of mixing Basam Chalav with Erot Hanukkah? And then go to bake up a whole scenario here, cook up a scenario that shows the dynamic quality of Halakha. That you're not allowed to render a halakhic decision in one area of halakha unless you're also an expert in other areas of halakha. So you cannot say, I studied Hilchot Shabbat, fine. But sometimes there's crossover, and it's the crossover sometimes that makes all the difference. Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav's son, wrote an article, and he gave a course in Hebrew University many, many years ago, Can Halachic Texts Form History? It was a rhetorical question. Of course, the answer is a resounding yes. Because when you study history, the most important part of getting the facts right is the reliability of the sources. So if you want to use newspapers as a reliable source to write today's history for another decade or another century, you're in big trouble. Because newspapers are slanted. And I remember in the early 70s, we had demonstrations for Soviet Jewry. So the New York Times wrote that 5,000 people attended the rally. The Jewish press wrote 500,000 people attended. And each one was talking about the same rally. And that's not, a close mistake. Each one had an agenda, because the police at the time estimated 50,000 people were at the rally, which means that the New York Times deliberately divided by 10, and the Jewish press deliberately multiplied by 10. Everybody had an agenda in how they projected the news. And if you want to use newspapers as a source of mystery, you're probably in very, very big trouble. Because newspapers, are slanted. And have there's nothing wrong with that. This is democracy. But they have an editorial slant. And it projects itself in the presentation of the history. When it comes to Sheilot Tshuvot, the response of literature of the last 1,000 years, people did not invent Shailas. They didn't just wake up in the morning with a Shaila, and Rabbanim did not write the works of Sheilot Tshuvot, the response of literature, on the basis of questions they concocted in the Beit Midrash. These are questions that came from normal human beings in normal human situations. And you can reconstruct history on the basis of putting together the puzzle of the questions. And I stress the questions. The answers, that's Torah, that's a Beit Midrash issue. But the questions are the historical issue. I'll tell you, give you a good example. Shelot Tshuvot B'Ma'amakim. Shelot Tshuvot B'Ma'amakim was written by a rabbi, Ephraim Oshri, Zichron Livracha, who was a 30-year-old rav in the ghetto of Kovna during World War II. My brother, Rabbi Yosef Adlentinek, uses the questions of Shelot Tshuvot B'Ma'amakim for Yom HaShoah communal observance. He just reads the questions, and you can just start crying in Rip Kriya. You don't have to bother with the answers, because the answers now, 75 years later, you know, we can argue, did he say right, did he say wrong? That's not even the issue. The issue is, people didn't ask questions in the Kavanah Ghetto. I forgot to say Yalav V'yavah in my Ribbon, you know, Rosh Chodesh, do I say Shemoneh Esrei Ovah? Those aren't the questions. These are questions that are heartbreaking questions, and tell the story of what life was in the ghetto. And Rabbi Soloveitchik made a career out of this, with regard to Jewish history in the Middle Ages and their economic situation and the social situation. If you want to know about modern orthodoxy in the latter part of the 20th century, all you have to do is read the questions of Igrot Moshe or Moshe Feinstein, and you can put the pieces together. Because people are asking questions. You find out that Jews in the summer went to the bungalow. That's the bungalows. That's how Moshe Feinstein would write it. And so on. So using Shelot Tshuvot is something that's historical and they're not just theoretical. Having said that, in source number one, in the Pitrei Tshuva, which is an anthology of responsive literature printed in the Yoredeya, the Shulchan Aruch makes a very, very important comment with regard to basar v'chalav, that not only is basar, meat and milk, forbidden to be cooked, it's also forbidden to be eaten as a cooked product, stressing as a cooked product, because the eating of meat and milk separately is only a rabbinic prohibition. Lo tivashel b'gidi b'chalei b'imo, the meat and milk has to be cooked, and it's also prohibited to derive benefit from, that is financial or other types of benefits, from the cooked product of basar halach. The basic proof text is the fact that Chachamim read the pasuk Lo tivashel b'gidi b'chalei b'imo 3 times in the Torah, twice in Shemot, once in Dvarim, and they said one was for the prohibition of cooking, one was prohibition of eating, one was prohibition of hana'ah, of deriving benefit. We're not going to get into the question of whether the listing of the 613 in the negative mitzvot of 365, does this list as 1, 2, or 3? All of the above are true, depending on which book of mitzvot you consulted. But that's an independent question. But everybody agrees there is an isu hana'ah, a prohibition from deriving benefit from a cooked product of basar v'chalav. Now what happens if you took a frying pan and you were going to fry schnitzel, some type of chicken product, whatever, but and you're going to use margarine, except by accident, you use butter. So now, if the pan was used for fleishik, for bisari, in the last 24 hours, even though there's no meat there, it's halakhically considered as if there was meat, and if I now put the butter over the open flame, and now it's cooking on this bisari fleishik pan that is fleishik within the last 24 hours, you have effectively violated basar v'chalav. Even though there's no meat there, but the flavor of the meat is still embedded in the pan, and therefore you have basar v'chalav. Okay, now you have congealed butter. After the story is now continuing, you have congealed butter. In days of old, people didn't have electric light, not fluorescent, not LEDs, nothing. Right? So how did they illuminate? With lamps. And lamp means you have to have some type of fuel that's going to illuminate. People did not throw out garbage. They used whatever they could use in recycling, and that was obviously very economical for them. And if there was some congealed fat as a result of some type of cooking, it would be scooped up, and they would be able to put a wick in it, and that would burn for however long it would burn. So the number one, as a given, if you have this kind of melted down butter, let's call it its Yiddish name, schmaltz, you have this fat this glob of fat, and you stick a wick in, you want to light up the living room, you can't do it, because that's called deriving benefit from basar b'chalav. That is not an issue. Everybody understands that. The issue is, you want to use it for Hanukkah candles. That's the issue. So you say, why not, and why yes, which is the thrust of the shear. If you wouldn't have two sides to this coin, the shear's over. So let's take a look. It's source number one. Ayin v'tshuvat Shar Ephraim, Siman Lamuchet. So the Pitei Tshuva quotes from the responsa literature. This is pre-Bar Ilan responsa project. So that's what we have to go on. Some great Talmud Chacham did an anthology of the literature of the Shilut Tshuvot, the responsa literature. The Pasak, who decided, who gave him Zak Alaha, v'chem'ah, sh'nitbashla v'kidera shel basar ben dumo, the butter that was cooked in a pot that of meat that was within a day used for meat, even though there's no meat there. Asur lahadlikba lahadir habayit. You are not allowed to, you're forbidden to use that congealed fat for purposes of illuminating the house. Sha'asur bahana. Mipam sha'asur bahana. Because it is forbidden to have benefit from basar b'chalav. Fine. That's given. Gam lahadlikba ner Chanukah. Here comes the question. What about using it as a Hanukkah candle? Af the mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu, pause, let's explain this. There's a concept in Halacha saying that the Torah was not given so that we can enjoy the mitzvah. If you happen to enjoy listening to the shofar sounds, that's fine. There's no avera, you know, you don't have. But you don't have to enjoy it. You don't have to enjoy sitting in the sukkah, you know, in the -3 degrees in Russia. You don't have to enjoy it. Some people might enjoy it. But let's say in Eretz Yisrael, we have Sukkot many times. It's very spring-like weather, even though it's the beginning of the fall, and you do enjoy going out to the porch and, you know, under the schach and so on. But that's not the point. Mitzvot, lav le'enot nidu. The mitzvah wasn't given so that you enjoy. You happen to like eating matzah. That's nice, but that's not the reason why we eat matzah. So if there's a principle, mitzvot, lav le'enot nidu, it means that even in a scenario where you're forbidden to have benefit, you would be able to use that object for the mitzvah anyway. If the purpose of the mitzvah we'll give some examples to it. If a person is, there's a concept in the Seventh Nidavim called Mudar Hana'ah. You have a brokers with a fallout with a guy, and you say, I don't have anything to do with this man. I don't have anything to do with him. And you box him out of your life with a nether, and that's a serious thing, called Mudar Hana'ah. And then all of a sudden, it turns out that guy happens to be a physician. Or you are the physician, and that person needs help, medical help, or vice versa. Because there's a mitzvah to heal, there's actually a mitzvah to heal, and here, we're not going to consider the fact that you're going to derive any benefit from the fact that the gentleman is a physician, and you're deriving benefit from him. He's doing a mitzvah now, he's healing you, and in the line of duty of a mitzvah, the hana'ah, the fact that you're enjoying it, becomes a mood issue.
Assuming fact, he isn't paid, I would assume it'd be usher to pay him.
Okay, so that's the story in the Dharm, you know how to handle that, but I'm just using this as an example of Issa Hanoh. So with regard to this scenario of the Hanukkah candle, well, I understand I can't use this candle for purposes of illuminating my living room. But for purposes of Hanukkah candles, we say in Hanerot Alav Kodeshem Ve'enon Rishut Lishtamesh Bahem Elo Do'otam Dovad Kedei Lo'odot Lo'alel. It's an object of without words, of saying Halel Takadosh Baruch Hu, praising God through the mitzvah of Hanukkah. But it's not to enjoy the candles. That's not what. That's why you have Sukkaniyot, so you can enjoy the Sukkaniyot.
It's not a mitzvah of Bavira.
What?
It's not a mitzvah of Bavira.
It's not a mitzvah of Bavira. Mitzvah of Bavira is a concept by itself. What we're trying to do is saying that the hana'ah factor becomes irrelevant when there's a mitzvah up for grabs. Mitzvah bav avera is when you do it one act and at the same time, simultaneously, it's a mitzvah and an avera, which is the classic case, lulav hagazul. You stole a lulav and you want to shake it and perform the mitzvah. So that's not going to work because the very act of taking the lulav and the act of taking the lulav without permission, which makes you a gazlan, is the same, very, very same act. Sometimes you can have two acts that are separated, and one is a mitzvah, one is an avera, and that's not going to be mitzvah bav avera. So that's a sugya in itself. But here,
the suggestion that perhaps the Ner Chanukah could be okay because it's mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. So all we're worried about, the only thing we're concerned about this Basa B'cholov, he didn't make the Basa B'cholov because he needed a Chanukah candle. He made the Basa B'cholov because he was frying schnitzel and inadvertently didn't use margarine, used butter. And now he's got this glob of infested Basa B'cholov butter, right? So that's what he has. And now he wants to use it for Hanukkah candle. So it's a different issue now. The Avera was one thing, and now the mitzvah is something else. So it's not mitzvah of Avera. So there's a suggestion that perhaps he could, because it's not the Hana'ah factor is irrelevant to Hanukkah. But then the continuation is, Mikol Makom, nevertheless, it's forbidden because of another consideration. Kevan de Bener Hanukkah Ba'i Shi'ur, there is a minimum quantitative value of how long the candle has to burn, and that's measured in the thickness of wax or the amount of oil that's put in. And we just jump a moment and say that there was a shi'ur suggested of a half an hour. We'll see where that came from. But let's assume there's a shi'ur that has to burn for a half an hour. So that is a minimum quantitative value. Once something has a minimum quantitative value, the following halakha kicks in. Ubebasar b'chalav, kevan she'asur b'hana'ah, because there is a prohibition deriving benefit, kitute michtet shiura. That's Chinese. What does that mean? That's a phrase lifted out of Masechet Sukkah, source number two. So let's just take a look at source number two, just to define the phrase kitute michtet shiura. The Mishnah says that a lulav that comes from a palm tree that was used for idolatrous worship. And the Torah in Parashat Re'eh talks about if such a tree was used for idolatrous purposes, the tree has to be burned. That's what the Torah says, the tree has to be burned. So, and then there's Ir HaNidachat, that's a city that the entire population went over to Avodah Zarah. They were convinced and encouraged to serve Avodah Zarah, and they did. Torah says you have to destroy that whole city. Let's not lose any sleep on this. The Tosefta says in Masechet Sanhedrin, Lo haya v'lo mivra. There never was an Ir HaNidachat similar to Ben Sore El Moreh. It's a nice concept, but it was never really brought out. But if there was such a thing as Ir HaNidachat, Torah says Lo yidbak ba me'uma min acherim. Everything had to be destroyed. Everything. So therefore, if you have an asherah, a lulav that came from such a tree that was served with Avodah Zarah, the halakha is, it has to be burnt. It has to be burnt. So Allah says clearly, this one has to be burnt. Now what happens if you take a beautiful lulav, I mean really gorgeous lulav, and the person checked it, it's so perfectly straight, and has the height even of the shear of the Chazon Ish, you can't get a better lulav like that. It's the most mehudar lulav, and on the market, you know, you can claim a big price for this lulav. But now you've burned it, so what's going to remain is ashes. And ashes can crumble up into the palm of your hand. And when you crumble up the ashes into the palm of your hand, you don't have the minimum four tvachim for a lulav. So the Mishnah disqualifies the use of a lulav asherah because it's going to be burnt. It wasn't burnt yet. You're not going to use a pile of ash for a lulav. But there's a principle, something that's online to be burnt, halakhically is considered burnt already. Kolo made me sarei. It's considered as if it was burned. And if you would burn it, you would not have the requisite minimum quantitative value of four tefachim of a lulav. And that's why it's disqualified. So what the Posek in the source number one is saying, that now I have this glob of butter that's absorbed with flavor of meat, so it's possible, it's forbidden to have any hana'ah. So if it's forbidden to have any hana'ah, any benefit, what do we do with it? You have to destroy it. You have to destroy it. And by destroying, even if you didn't destroy it yet, because your great mind is to save on a candle and use it for Hanukkah candle, but it's theoretically already destroyed. And once it's destroyed, you're not going to have enough filament there to give you the half hour's worth of a candle. And that's why you cannot use that. Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that. I mean, you're saying that something that is Pharaoh, that was used for Avodah Zarah, the reason you can't use this is that it doesn't have a minimum halakh of shear.
Right.
I mean, it seemed there to be a better reason not to use it, because it was used for Avodah Zarah.
Right, so the Rambam in his Mishnah commentary says that there is an issue here of mitzvah b'avodah zarah also, because the fact you're supposed to destroy it, you're not supposed to have it in your possession any longer, so by taking it as a lulav, it's clearly mitzvah bava b'avera. So there's another, but the Gemara works this out as ketuteh mitzvah shira, and it follows in other sugyot, it shows up as well. So this is what the Gemara, I'm using this just to show the concept. The concept, right, it's a little roundabout. I agree, a little roundabout. But what we have in the first source are two possibilities. You would be allowed to use that glob of butter for Hanukkah candles because it's not lav lehen, no, or you're not allowed to use it because it's really on its way to being destroyed and you don't have the minimum quantitative value. But if we just follow up the last line,
why would you destroy it?
I'm sorry?
Why would you destroy it?
Burning it, throwing the fire.
So you did, you wouldn't even be able to burn off this.
What would you mean?
It won't even burn. I mean, it's not a matter that it doesn't have a shear, it's just going to burn. So what's.
It'll become charred. You throw it into a mass of fire, it'll certainly become charred. It's not going to remain as a glob of oil. It's going to burn. Of course, it's going to burn. It will burn for fire, it's going to burn in the fire.
But once it's burned and done, it's you can't really use it for any kind of.
Correct, that's the whole point. And because you cannot use it, because
it's not an issue of shear, is what I'm saying. It's gone.
No, but it's before you use it. You can't use it before you burn it. Before you burn it, you can't use it.
Why is the argument of Shura?
I find the same.
It's as if there's not. It's as if it, the amount of.
You may argue that it's here, so I can use it. So the answer is that halakhically it's not here anymore. So it's a technical knockout. It's a halakhic technical knockout, if you make. So the last line of source number one quotes the Prima Godem, who's another posek of the Achronim, and he says, Shatiku Bishmo de Lener Hanukkah Shari. There's actually an opinion that thinks that you actually can light Hanukkah candles. But the Shar Ephraim says, Ubimchilat Kodo, Bet Memchet Kaf, Ubimchilat Kodo, I beg your pardon, as we would say, Lo Iyen Sham Heite, you didn't really see this material clearly because. He says that the Prima Godem actually said that to use this for Ner Hanukkah would be forbidden. But the bottom line is, we end up with two opinions. One, certainly you cannot use it, and one, maybe you cannot use it. There's a possible source of the Prima Godem who says that the Ner Hanukkah Shari, that it is permissible, and the reason would be mitzvot lahav lav lehenot. There's no problem of the prohibition of deriving benefit from the glob of the butter because of basa b'cholov, because it's a mitzvah now. I'm using it for a mitzvah. And the second consideration, for some reason, we don't know yet why, ketuteh mitzvah shira is not relevant to this discussion. And if it's not relevant to this discussion, then it's perfectly okay to use that glob of butter for Nel Hanukkah. And now we're going to try to pan out and see how does this work. Yeah.
I'm just going back to the first historical principles. The whole reason for the Pat Shemin was there are other Pate Shemin that were there were right. With Tavon already because of the Greeks using them for.
Right.
So, I mean, here you are saying that the whole Mitzvah of Hanukkah is to commemorate the Pat Shemin that was Tahor. So, like, how could you then.
We're not talking about Tahara. We're talking about Issa Behetar. Issa Behetar is not Tahara, it's a different branch of Allah. And a news for you that you, my bar mitzvah yesterday, Rabbi found out that it was my birthday, and Parshat Toldot was my bar mitzvah parsha. But we celebrated a few weeks down the line on Hanukkah, and I remember my Hanukkah drasha, my bar mitzvah drasha very, very well. And it had to do with who needed the next bar shemen. There's a halacha of Tumah Hutra B'tzibur. It's a big question. And Rav Chaim, the Beis Halevi, Bruch's great grandfather, a little piece on this. It's a. Okay, and Rav Chaim said that the Nes Pach Shemen wasn't the expansion of the oil, because the expanded oil would be disqualified to, if it would be miraculous oil, you couldn't light it in the Beit Mikdash anyway.
Also doesn't have a shear. No, it also doesn't have a shear, the miraculous oil.
Right, it doesn't have a shear, but it's not even Shemen Zayit Zah. Right. It's not a chetzah of Shemen Zayis. Rav Chaim said it's not a chetzah of Shemen Zayit because it's miraculous oil. But and he said the nest was in the concentration. It was the same quantity of oil throughout the week, but it burnt in eighth of the time that it should have burnt. The concentration is greater. Source number three is where we get into Hanukkah. The question is, if the candle burns out, you have to relight it. sometimes this happens, they open a window, and the bird's out. Kaftar, and the Gemara says, if the bird's out, but everything was okay at the time of the burning, then you don't have to relight it. So the Gemara questions, the Kaftar, ein sakukla, if it burns out, you don't have to relight it? The Raminu, we can posit a question, that was a contradiction to this. The Braita says, mitzvatan, the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles, mitzvah hama, from sundown, ad shetichle regel min ashuk. Until people have left the marketplace, which literally means people are no longer on the street, and therefore it's a waste of time to light outside, because the purpose is that people should see it. Fine. My love, what does this mean, ad shetichle regel min ashuk? The e-kafta, if it blew out, hadar madlikla, you continue to, you relight it, because there's still going to be people on the street. So make sure the Hanukkah candles are well lit for the duration of the time that you have to have it lit. So is this a contradiction? Is this right there? Actually, the inference is that if the candle blew out, you have to relight it, because the mitzvah is from A to B, from sundown until whatever is called tichle regel min ashuk. And if for whatever reason the candle is not burning, you better relight it, because you must necessarily have the candle burning for the duration of A to B, which is from sundown until the regular show. So Gemara says, no, you do not have to come to that inference. Lo, the e lo adlik madlik. What the Gemara is saying is that if you didn't light Hanukkah candles at the first moment of obligation, which is sundown, but you're 5 minutes after sundown, 10 minutes after sundown, you ought to light. You still have to light the candles. But the end zone is going to remain the same. So you could have a scenario where somebody's going to light in the days of the Rambam. He says this is kimo chatzi sha'a. He doesn't say it's a half an hour. He says it's roughly a half an hour. That's very important, that word, kimo, roughly. Because it's not a halacha l'moshe m'sinai that it's a half an hour. The Rambam thought in his days, a half hour after sundown, people are home and that's it. Nobody's on the street any longer. But I remember the Rav Zichron the Bracha said he used to light candles for 2 hours. So he lived at 5 o'clock at 5 p.m. and he said rush hour. Rush hour ends at 7 o'clock in New York City, so you have to have it lit for 2 hours because that's called tichle regel meshuk. And then he said, what about the theater crowd that goes out at 8 and comes back at 11? So Rav says loy chayshishim for the theater crowd. We don't have to worry about the theater crowd.
The Gemara worries about it.
The Gemara says that the people in the so world. Are, so let me say, the Gemara, we're going to get to it. I have another source. We'll get to it in a moment, mamash. So that's the first opinion, that when the Gemara says, Mishetishka Hama, from sundown until Tithurei Mashuv, it means that if you have not lit yet from sundown, then you have an obligation to light. So one guy's going to light for half an hour, one guy's going to light for 25 minutes, and the next guy for 20 minutes, and 15 minutes, and maybe even 1 minute. As long as there's still people out there, you better light the candles. But it has nothing to do with the duration of time that your candles are lit. It's a function of the time zone that people are still out on the street, and the beginning of nighttime it kicked in, and that's where it's sundown. So I'll just jump and say that in Shulchan Aruch we are makbid to start after Tzeitah Kochavim, but the Rambam says you start from sundown actually, which is the custom of Yerushalayim, because of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon adopted the custom of the Rambam, and we light candles from sundown, not from Tzeitah Kochavim.
And you have that lit longer?
Yeah, you have to keep it until the Rosh Hashanah anyway, and that's the question what that is. But and then the Gemara says there's another reason that we can explain this Braita. Inami, the Shiura. The Shiura means when the Mishnah, when the Braita says you light candles from sundown until people have left the market, that is a quantitative value. Whatever it is, say a half an hour, for argument's sake, half an hour. And that means once you say it's a half an hour, that's going to depend upon the amount of oil that you have in the cup of an Ner Hanukkah. So the second opinion does talk about a quantitative value. The first opinion does not. Or to translate this into the language or the idiom of the Lamdanei Brisk. This is a very, very common phrase that's used, Gavra and Cheftza. I actually gave a talk about this in an academic conference in St. Petersburg half a year ago. The use of Gavra and Cheftza. Gavra means the subjective, the person. Cheftza means the object. The Gemara Masechta Nedarim says there's the neder and shvua. There's two different types of obligations. The Torah doesn't have to use words differently if it means the same thing. So obviously the parasha that talks about Nedarim is one thing, and the parasha that talks about Shvuot is something else. And that's why the two joint Masechtot in Shas, one is Masechta Nedarim, one is Masechta Shvuot. And we say kol nidre, kol nidre, v'sarei, v'koneme, shvuei. It's not a neder, it's not a shvuei, it's something else. So on the first page of Masechet Nedarim, it says, you know what the difference is? A neder is if I say that this cupcake is forbidden for me for the next hour, in an expression of a neder, then I've made this cupcake for an hour treif. And the reason I'm not eating it, because it's pork. That's why I'm not eating it. I created a personalized prohibition on the object. Just like pork is a forbidden, so this now becomes forbidden for an hour. If I prohibit it with an expression of a shvu'ah, I'm saying that the cupcake is 100% kosher, but I've distanced myself from the cupcake for the hour. Now you might say, this is semantics. What is the big difference? In both scenarios, you're not going to eat the cupcake. One has one set of rules, and the other has a completely different set of rules. And on that, there are two mesechtot called Masechet Nedarim and Masechet Shvuot to explain the difference. But that is the fundamental difference. What Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, did with this is he took it into a different league. And now he applies it to so many different areas of halakha. When we talk about the half an hour, what does that mean? Does that mean that there is an amount of oil in the cup of the Hanukkah candle, and that is an object? That's an object. And that's why it has to be a half an hour, no matter when. In our opinion, because people now, according to we'll see in Shulchan Aruch in a moment, people light candles even later than sundown, and even way later than Tzedek HaChamim, come home from work at 7 and 8, but they were at some affair, and they come back at 9, they light Hanukkah candles. As long as there's somebody awake in the house, somebody else, you're allowed to light Hanukkah candles, even if there's nobody on the street. Everybody says Hanukkah candles have to burn for half an hour. So that means it's a halakha in the chefza, in the object itself, in the object. Whereas if you believe that what the Gemara is talking about is that this is a duration of time, this is the framework of time that we light Hanukkah candles. The optimum is from sundown. Less good is a minute later. Less good, 2 minutes later. And so on, so on, so on. And it works its way until the Tichlor Regal Minashur. So you can have a scenario that you only light Hanukkah candles for 5 minutes. And that's good. As long as you were in that framework, which means that this has nothing to do with the amount of oil. It's simply a time gauge of the person, of the gavra, when you have an obligation to light the candles. And what it turns out is that if you see it as a personalized obligation, has nothing to do with the object of the oil itself, then indeed, tuta michtet shiura, the idea that something is going to be burned, in theory, it no longer has a quantitative value, is an irrelevant factor. And in that case, the person would be able to use the glob of oil that's saturated with meat flavor. But if you say that the oil has a minimum quantitative value to give us a specific amount of time that it burns, then we apply the idea that it's a chefza, it's an object. It's a mitzvah that we're focusing on the object. And then because the glob of butter saturated with meat flavor is going to have to be destroyed, so there is no quantitative value halakhically to talk about, and you could not use it. Notice the two sides of the coin of source number one in the tshuva, the broth by the tshuva, is really dependent upon these two answers in the Gemara itself. Either the ilo adlik madlik, if I have not yet lit from sundown, now I should still light. Or the inami, the second suggestion is, it has to do with the shear. Now, how does this play out in the halakha? So let's just jump to the last source in the Rambam. It should have been printed earlier, but Rambam says, Ein madlikim nerot Chanukah kodem shetishka hachama ela im shkiyata. You do not light Chanukah candles before sundown, but rather with sundown. Lo ma'acharim v'lo makdimim. Not earlier, not later. This is very important, what the Rambam is saying. Not earlier, not later. However, with not earlier is a problem, because the Shulchan Aruch actually throws in a view and says that there are extenuating circumstances that you can light earlier. It's called Plaga Mincha, which is approximately roughly an hour and a quarter, before sundown. And that's a Zman that's taken into consideration for many, many areas of Halakha when considering the beginning of nightfall for various mitzvot. So if you're not sure if you can calculate it, what you do is you download from Google Store the following Sha'ot Zmaniyot clock. This is a Sha'ot Zmaniyot clock that you study Masechet, developed by my son Yehuda Adler. We didn't talk about my son Yehuda Adler.
We haven't gotten that far.
And you get a two-page in English explanation of Sha'ot Zmaniyot. and you have the Netzach Hamah line and the Shkia line, and the hours are broken into the relative hours, and it's also functioned by location. So it's now on Toronto, and you can see the gap between the hours of the nighttime are large, and the gap between the daytime are small, because that's what we're going into winter now. That's exactly what we have.
How long is each hour now?
It's also split. Right, so that's why you can figure out, against your own watch, it's about 50 minutes.
Okay.
It's about 50 minutes. The halakhic hour is now about 50 minutes. So when I say an hour and a quarter before sundown, it's the relative hour and a quarter before sundown. And let's say you don't know if you can have enough time to daven mincha, but you don't have a watch and you don't have a calendar, all you need is this, and you're all set. Because you know if you're closing in on Shkia on sundown or not. And it works. I'm telling you, my son asked me to do a guinea pig test throughout the world. It works all over the place. And it's free. It's free. In the Google stores, it's called Jewish Clock. You download it and you have it. And read the explanation, two-page explanation, signed by you, the adler, at the end. And this was just a thing he did on the side. You know, he had some free time in the office, and he developed this. But that's what the guys are doing in Israel. So,
where did you take
him? He's a high tech man. Oh yeah, that's what he does. Yeah. You have to have a high tech man in the family. If your computer goes on the blink, you know, who do you call? You know? And you know, he's really a wonderful son. I don't do these things anymore. I need help. All right, I'll come over. You know, like, you know, do me a big favor.
What does it charge you?
good boy. So the Shulchan will say that if you're really stuck and you're not going to be home at night, but you're home after Chag HaMincha, you can actually light Hanukkah candles, just make sure that it's going to burn the requisite time extra. But we actually do that Friday night of Shabbos Hanukkah. It's exactly what we do. Because you're not going to light candles after sundown, but you have to light before sundown. So what we do is we rely on that view. You have no other choice. By the way, there is a choice. The Rav said this, but he said don't rule halakhically like this. You know what the choice is? That Friday night of Shabbos Hanukkah, you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, that the day extends until the second sundown, which is 52 minutes after astronomical sundown. And hence, after astronomical sundown, the calendar date has changed to the 25th of Kislev. Let's say Shabbos is the first day of Hanukkah. And so it's already the 25th of Kislev, but Shabbos didn't kick in yet until the 52 minutes after astronomical sundown. And in that time framework, you can light Hanukkah candles and make a bracha. But none of us are going to do that.
I assume Rabbeinu Tam means it doesn't kick in. That when Rabbeinu Tam says the night starts at 55 minutes
right.
later,
Shabbos doesn't kick in, but the day changes.
Oh, he would admit the day changes too.
You don't got a whole mile of life. If the kid is born in that time framework, the bris is not going to be
on Sunday.
Yeah.
Rabbeinu Tam agrees that bris would be on Shabbos, even though you can be Mechala Shabbos at that time. A boy's born 25 minutes after on Friday.
If possible, Rabbeinu Tam will say that the baby will be a Brit on Friday. My brother Yossi
has one
in that time framework. According to Rabbeinu Tam, the Brit was supposed to be on Friday. According to other Poskim, it was supposed to be on Shabbos. And according to others, Misafik, it was supposed to be on Sunday. It was a Bein HaShmasho.
Right.
So once Shabbos, he called the Rav in Boston. And the Rav said, Safik, the Raisa Lachonah, you make the Brit on Sunday. Right. So my brother gave his bar fire. He said, this kid was born into a machloket. And there's nothing wrong.
What is he doing now, this kid?
He donated his kidney to his mom.
Oh, that's when he donated
the
kidney.
Then and then came an Aliyah. So he's at South.
They named the baby Hillel Shammai.
Well, then
the appropriate name, they should name the baby Hillel Shammai. All right. Well, what is the technical difference between astronomic Shkia and regular Shkia?
Okay, so the question is, first, when the sun starts setting, and we call it astronomical sundown, or that there's no, you know, zecher of light, there's nothing there. That might be considered sundown. Rabbeinu Tam, the chassidim believe this, that's why they daven mincha late. Everybody, the Vilna Gaon was yelling against this, that the chassidim were davening mincha very late after sundown. But their claim was, no, it's still before sundown because of Rabbeinu Tam.
Historically, they used to violate Shabbos a half an hour after sunset in many historical time periods. Until the Vilna Gaon, the Rabbeinu Tam is the view quoted in
the
Shulchan Aruch. And the half an hour, when it's dark outside on Friday, people would be quote-unquote driving. That was a common practice historically. Today, we consider that a Mechala Shabbos.
Here's They were talking about the flip side, where if you start Shabbos early, let's say in 7 months, we do it in Eretz Yisrael, I'm sure you do it here too. So you can't make Shabbos at 1 in the afternoon, but you can make it from Plag HaMincha. So it's still daytime now, and you come back here to Kabbalah Shabbat and make Jewish. So we know that these halachas a little bit, they work in interesting ways. So the Rambam says, he was a stickler. He said, Ein madlikim nerot Hanukkah, so it's number 7, Kogim shikishkaf amat, before sundown, Ela in shkiyata, which this is the preferred time. Lo makrim v'lo makdidim. But having said that, shachach o hizid. Perhaps, you know, we're human beings. You forgot. You slipped and you, or there was a reason that you just couldn't light on time. V'lo hidlik in shkiyata chava, madlik v'holeich ad shetich l'reda menashuk. You continue, you have the opportunity to still light candles until there are no longer people on the street. But the Rambam believes that after there are no longer people on the streets, we'll see you tomorrow night for Hanukkah. But you blew it. There's no longer a mitzvah tonight. That's what the Rambam believes. There's no such halakhic animal lighting Hanukkah candles at 10:30 at night. You can't do that anymore. And he says, the kama hu zman zeh, how much is this time? Kimo chatzi sha'a o yeter. Give or take, half an hour. Avaris man zeh, eino matli. Once people are off the street, you cannot light any longer. That's the Rambam. But in Shulchan Aruch, we already have a different take on this. Take a look at source number 5. And I'm just going to point out that some of the language of Shulchan Aruch resonates the Rambam's language. There's a fellow in Bar Ilan who did a comparative study in the language of the Rambam in Mishneh Torah and the language of Rabbi Yosef Karo in Shulchan Aruch, and 30% of Rabbi Yosef Karo is Rambam's words. Without quoting.
Right,
that's called plagiarism. Right, but in legal terms, you'd go to court for something like that.
But in the Middle Ages, that was a beautiful way. The way exactly. To give kabbalah to somebody historically was plagiarism.
The Rambam would make a kiddush to know that somebody wrote a sefer, and 30% of the sefer is his work. He loved it. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
It shows that you learned the book. So the Rambam says, so the Shulchan Aruch says, Ein madlikim ner Hanukkah kodesh shetishkach hamat. You don't light Hanukkah candles before sundown. Ela im sof shkiyata. That's an interpolation of the Rambam's words. So I'm going to say that. But the end of the Shkia, and the Mishabura says, end of the Shkia means Tzeta Kohavim. Now Tzeta Kohavim, parents of the stars, is also a little bit fluid. Does it mean 18 or 20 minutes after sundown? Does it mean 30 minutes? Does it mean 72 minutes? There are different views. There are 90 minutes. There are different views as to when is Tzeta Kohavim. I'm sure you're well aware that for Shabbat, the Rabbeinu Tam says 72 minutes, and some people end Shabbos later than most people do on the calendar. And that's okay. That's okay. When I was once a guest speaker in my brother Shulam Tinek in Rina Tisrael, and one of the last year was by Katsuy Mincha Marv, and a nice audience there and so on, and the president tells me, you can go until Marv, until after Shabbat, until Seder Shabbat. Okay, so I figured I was going to be funny. I got up there and I heard that in Rina, they home from Rabbeinu Tam. That gives me another 20 minutes to give the shiur. So everybody laughs politely.
Yeah.
And my brother gets up, he's the rabbi, in front of everybody, and he says, in Rina, there's no Rabbeinu Tam when the Yankees are playing the Red Sox on Matzah Shabbos. So just that night was priorities. Right, get your priorities right. He's the rabbi of the show, right? But he can get away with it. In his yeshiva, when they dismantled old Yankee Stadium and auctioned off, the shul bought one of the seats in the stadium, and it's in his office. And when they interview students, they sit in this seat, and they're already, you know, brought into the fold of. And if anybody in school there has the audacity to be a fan of the New York Mets, it's grounds for suspension from the yeshiva. He's crazy. This is what one of our friends, who was a great teacher of Tanakh, but I could also refer to Sandor of Porshleima, Dr. Brian Levy. Know Brian Levy?
Of course.
So Brian told me, she says, every time I get involved in baseball, it's a Avodah Zarah. Alama Nikra Shema Baseball, plus it's Base HaBaal.
I'm Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. What would she say about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? I know, but what would she say?
We got him on a roll once on Purim. And he, in terms of baseball trivia, knew more than anybody else in Eretz Yisrael.
No, he didn't. More than anybody in America. Rav Tabori told me, if I may, right. You know, just when he was in the Wayukola once, So they was having an argument, they're talking baseball, and after 5 minutes, Ravarm walked over. He had 322, 24 home runs, 98 RBIs. Now you can go learn.
Yeah. So let me just wrap this up by saying that the Tosfot actually believe the other way, that it's not halakha in the person lighting, but it's halakha in the object. And that's why Rama says, because today we light way later, we're not considering the people on the street, and that already has its roots in the Gemara because of anti-Semitism. And it's not an accident that Hanukkah and December 25th are in the same season. And we suffered tremendously, tremendously in that season. So we lit inside. I never saw in America anybody light by the door. By the window, people lit. And I saw many people light by the door, the way the original halakha was. But the Gemara already talks about problems of terrorism and so on. So we lit inside. The Rama, and certainly in Christian Europe, Jews lit inside. And he's, even though we're lighting inside, so he says, all right, it's nice to keep the original Zman, but if you're lighting later, that's fine, but the candle has to burn for the half an hour. Notice he saw it as a type of an object. And again, that flips back to that original question with regard to the glove. I'm just going to end with one thought. What does that mean? So it means, translate, till people come home from the marketplace. So the Gemara says, till there were Persians who were in the wood business for home heating. And the idea was that they were the last ones who closed shop at the market, because if somebody came home and saw he was short on wood, he'd run back to the market. It essentially means there's still Jews on the street, because they are purchasing wood for home heating. The Rav said it doesn't mean that. He said it means that there's chrisum hanes, there's an advertisement of the miracle, even for goyim. We have something to say to Goyim as well in the midst of Pershulanes. I think the Lubavitchers understand this very well. Tichlel Regel Min HaShuv, especially coming after Black Friday, the Shuv is a symbol of materialism. Sometimes you go to buy something because you need milk, you go buy milk. You need bread, you buy bread. Sometimes the sport is shopping. You don't need anything. You don't need anything, but that's what you do. You go shopping. And this was a Greek thing also. To build up your wealth and so on. You light Hanukkah candles until you get your feet out of the market, out of the whole mentality of what going to the shuk is all about. And that's a message that I think is very appropriate in Western society today as well. Yes, we have Baruch Hashem, we have our means, so we can make life comfortable and so on. But the question is overdosing on this. And just going shopping for the sake of shopping, not because I need anything, is the message of Hanukkah.
Thank you very much. Yeshikoa.